Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Kevin Combs. I'm Vice President here at McKinney Flavelle. Today is August 12, 2019, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Weekly Podcast. Today, I'm filling in for our revered leader, Mike Coughlin, who's up to no good as usual. Yeah, I don't know how much vacation time he gets, but seems like too much, right, Nicole?
Yeah, way too much. I need to borrow a little bit of that.
There you go. And as you can tell, I have Nicole Thomas, Vice President McKinney Flavelle, joining me today. And today we're going to be discussing today's WASDE report. But first, Nicole, I have a big question for you.
Okay.
Antonio Brown.
Oh, man.
What is up with this guy? You trade him to us.
That guy's such a problem.
I thought we got a heck of a deal, one of the top wide receivers in the NFL. And here he doesn't appear to be happy with his, well, the NFL is not happy with his helmet. And he's saying, I'm not going to play unless I can wear my old helmet.
See, that was a strategic move on the part of the Steelers. We gave you the impression that you were getting something good, knowing that somewhere along the line, hopefully, you know, sometime in the middle of the season, I think is what we were wishing for, ideally, then you'd have some problems. And it would just help it make a little easier for us to get into the playoffs. That's all.
All right. Well, I got news for you. Hey. It's another year, and optimism reigns for the soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders because we're 1-0 in the preseason, and we beat your other former team, the Rams.
Oh, wow. With, let me guess, a handful of starters playing that game at all?
Yeah, don't worry about the details.
Okay. I get it.
It shows our depth. We got another good year coming for Raider football, hopefully.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
sell some seats in Vegas, man. That's what it's all about.
Well,
sell some seats.
We still got at least another year here in Oakland, and maybe another year after that. We'll see. But anyway, we're 1-0 preseason football, and that means absolutely nothing. So let's get back to commodities here, Nicole. Obviously, we had the WASDE report today. It was very anticipated for what the numbers were going to be on corn in particular. We had a range of acreage that was like 8 million from the low to the high. We had yield projections that were like 10 bushels an acre from the low to the high. And it seems like we pretty much hit the high. But we also got a little bit of news out this morning about how they're coming about these estimates that seems a critical thing people that don't pay a lot of attention might not have caught. So what's up? What gives?
Well, I might be showing my age a little bit here, but you remember there was this awesome science fiction show back in the day called Quantum Leap.
Sure.
And whenever the guy would leap into some random person's life, he'd say, "Oh boy," I think that's how I felt about today's report.
Oh boy.
You know, the numbers were surprising for sure. But the market reaction isn't surprising based on the numbers in today's report. So USDA peg corn planted acreage at 90 million acres compared to the 83.6 million acres estimated in their June acreage report. Harvested area was revised to 82 million acres, which amounts to a harvest rate of a little better than 91% compared to last year's harvest rate of about 91.7%. And that put total production at 13.9 billion bushels, which would be a mere 4% decline from last year. Now, why it's interesting is because if you talk to just about anybody in the trade, farmers, processors, CTAs, et cetera, there's still the opinion that this year's crop will be well below last year. And as you mentioned, Kevin, the analyst projections were pretty broad with acreage guesstimates as low as 83 million, as high as 90 million. But the average for all of those was just shy of about 88 million acres. And then in terms of harvest, the average is estimated at 80.5 million acres compared to the 82 million acres USDA is projecting via today's report. And the yield average amongst those analysts was just below 165 bushels per acre, which would have put production near 13.3 billion bushels. That would have been down 600 million bushels from the projection USDA put out today, and about 8% lower than the current crop year, or 18-19.
Right.
Now, as you mentioned, let's take a second to discuss what's behind those numbers, because that's critical.
Exactly.
USDA, via National Agricultural Statistics Service, said that they counted all planted corn acres, whether they were planted for cover crop and or intended for harvest. So that leaves out a little bit there. And there could be a big difference between those planted acres and what is actually going to be harvested. They also stated that they will wait until September to do their counting of corn ears and plants. So basically your crop tours. And as such, it's hard to get a good handle on actual yield until that happens, which is why it was somewhat surprising to see them raise yields at this stage. And the reality is we still have corn acreage in the middle of pollination. And when you look at NASS's maps on yields, they're projecting some sharp yield declines for Illinois, down 29 bushels per acre versus last year. Indiana, down 23 bushels per acre. And Ohio, down 27 bushels per acre from last year. So for perspective, last year, Illinois was 12% of the total acreage. Indiana was about 6% of total acreage. And Ohio was about 4% of acreage. So they did project some sizable yield increases in other states. They just happen to be states with more marginal acreage relative to the big picture. For instance, they expect Texas yields to increase by 37 bushels per acre. But last year, that state was only about 2.5% of the total acreage. For Colorado, which typically accounts for less than 2% of total corn acreage, its yields were projected higher by 20 bushels per acre. So there's obviously a disconnect between the numbers put out today and what folks are saying verbally, and even really understanding what the true numbers are. And my guess, I'll have to confirm this for folks later, but I think one reason why, counter to sort of this anecdotal explanation of what's going on in as far as production is concerned, one reason why we saw that futures price action was likely a result of, to some degree anyway, of machine trading, something we see more commonly in the futures market these days, and often explains why futures can move so dramatically, sometimes in a counterintuitive direction. But based on the numbers presented today via the report, if you had an algorithm set up to read those numbers and it instructed, as far as the actual trades were concerned, that if that number is equal to or greater than X, then do Y, you could see how you could end up with a major sell-off like this, even though there's still a lot of people in the market who are very skeptical of the numbers as they stand today. But the bottom line on futures, my opinion, get in while the getting is good, because we're likely to see some bullish revisions to the numbers down the road.
Yeah, I could disagree. I think these numbers are, you know, very good opportunity, especially coming off from the highs where we are. And can't get hurt under $4 for some of these nearby contracts.
Right.
That's for sure. Great. Well, I think you covered corn great there. What about soybeans? Was there any shenanigans on the soybean side?
Well, poor soybeans. They're like the black sheep of markets right now. But it was an active trading day for them too. But get this. Soybean acreage in this report dropped by about 3.3 million acres. The yield was left unchanged, and total production came down by almost 200 million bushels. Yet, in the futures market, futures were down double digits. So again, probably seeing some signals there, but likely mostly spillover trading from what was going on the corn side. One thing I did agree with was the lower revision to exports for 2019-20, down by 100 million bushels. And with all the negative sentiment we've heard between the U.S. and Chinese governments of late, no one's overly confident something will be worked out in terms of a trade deal before, at least well into the fourth quarter, when soy exports tend to trend higher. And ending stocks for 18-19 were raised due to a slight downward revision of crush demand of about 20 million bushels. And we're seeing that as crush, though still historically strong, has slowed a bit by a few percentage points. And global projections for 2019-20 were more or less left unchanged, with the exception of the U.S., of course, with the expectation remaining that Brazil will produce 123 million metric tons of soybeans, beating out the U.S. in production, and Argentina to produce 53 million metric tons of soybeans, which is a slight decline from last year. So on the soy side, not too dramatic of a change, ending stock still hovering in sort of that mid 700 billion bushel range for the time being. Then for soybean oil on the domestic side of things, not much changed other than the biodiesel category. They lowered it by 100 million pounds for 2018-19 and 2019-20, respectively.
Okay.
That's partially offset the lower production number for 18-19 with the lower crush. But in the end, it led to lower ending stocks for 18-19 and subsequently lower beginning stocks for 19-20. But all in all, ending stocks for the upcoming year are still right around 1.5 billion pounds. So not much of a change there. And USDA is still projecting prices to kind of average around 29 and a half cents a pound.
Right. Okay, great.
So what about sugar, Kevin? Eventful?
Sugar, you know, there's a couple little things that were interesting tidbits. I wouldn't call it so far as to say it was a strong move anyway, shape or form. But certainly we got some production increases. So good news on the production front. Mm-hmm. Beet sugar in total, when you look at 18-19 and 19-20, was up 92,000 short tons raw value.
Sure.
Which most of that came in 18-19 as USDA is now forecasting a much higher early harvest than in some of their initial numbers.
Sure.
So when you looked at 19-20 production, they only raised it 4,000 tons.
Gotcha.
To 5.179 million tons. So that doesn't seem significant, but it does show the crop is progressing better than anticipated despite all the late plantings and some of the really wet weather this spring.
Sure.
And when you look at the actual crop for the beets, they actually are placing that at 5.106. So for 19-20, they're looking for an even bigger, earlier harvest to get up to that number, which given this number, you know, that's probably a little bit questionable, but still, you know, pretty solid number and good supply. Not right. Not great from beets. You know, it's just 2017-18, we had almost 5.3 million ton crop. So the beets will have a little bit less. Wow. Sugar to market, which when you looked at deliveries, you know, we're seeing deliveries for beet sugar down 4.4% and cane up 4.6%. So a little bit of an increase. And the USDA did look at deliveries this month as well and has decided we're seeing a little bit of an uptick. And so they increased deliveries for 2018-19 by 75,000 tons. So a very good sign for the industry.
Yeah, certainly.
See something on the uptick instead of the downtick.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, so after last year's decline, we're now looking at a little bit of an increase. Deliveries overall are up like 1.4%. When you consider population growth, 0.8%. Not bad.
Right, exactly. A little better. Cool.
A little bit better. The optimism kind of ends with 2018-19, however. They looked at 2019-20. They did increase that demand number as well, and they took deliveries for food use up 50,000 tons, but it's only a 25,000 ton increase over 18-19. So they're still showing a lot of concern over, you know, all the dietary labeling requirements, et cetera, and, you know, people trying to avoid added sugars.
Sure.
So
interesting.
The other thing I didn't hit on the supply side that I thought was interesting was cane production.
Yeah.
So Florida, they increased cane production 45,000 tons as well.
Wow.
And that makes, you know, almost a 2.1 million ton crop for Florida with a 1.9 million ton crop in Louisiana, which I still think has some upside there.
Right.
And really strong cane supplies going to be available again this year. And, you know, I think that's reflective of the 16 market, which continues to trade in that low 26 range for throughout 2020. So
right,
doesn't look like we got any real supply concerns. And of course, with the sugar program, we'll eventually reset the stocks to use ratio back to 13.5%. But with all this maneuvers, you're up 0.2% to 13.7%. So kind of a ho-hum report overall.
Yeah.
We got sugar. We got enough. There was no major changes that are going to require future actions from the USDA to manage supply demand. It just kind of looks good.
So good for sugar, good for soybeans. Just don't know for corn.
Don't know for corn. Well, I think obviously September has always been a key report when you look at the
right
reports from a production standpoint. You really start to get into harvest and see what things are looking at this year. We might not even really be much on the harvest on corn, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not by the time, you know, usually the middle of the month for the WASDE report, we probably will have still a little ways to go.
Yeah. So I think September should give a much better idea. And I'm sure we have the USDA, like you mentioned, will have a chance to do their measurements of the crop and county corn, see what the actual kernels look like, etc. We should also be hearing from some of the private crop tours before then, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Usually we would have heard a little bit from their initial runs. Those groups usually would go out sometime in early to mid July and then go out again early to mid August. So with this being about a month behind, we should at least get some of the first round of estimates here in the coming weeks. But like the USDA, they may be out in the fields in September trying to get that second round done and give us all a slightly better handle on what we have.
Hopefully everyone's able to take advantage of these markets from the buy side anyway, but
yes.
You know, from the sell side, today's report was obviously not welcome news. And I'm sure there are many a producer that are a little upset.
just a little bit. Basis still looks good so far anyway for them from a producer standpoint.
Well, they got basis going. That may go up now.
Yeah, right.
They may even take that up a little bit higher, but certainly the potential of setting these numbers and showing a very bearish corn forecast when you don't take into account all the information, I think would be upsetting for most producers
at this point. Yeah, so. Agreed.
All right. Well, that wraps up our coverage of today's WASDE report and our hot commodity podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening in. And as Mike always says, live with an attitude of gratitude. Until next time, take care.
Bye-bye.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.